I'm David Zimes. I've been a professional guitarist for 30 years or so now, and have had the great good fortune in today's world to be able to make a living doing music, both as a guitarist and a singer and a conductor. And I have always been very, very fascinated with the music of Paul Simon. And one of the reasons is because he writes his songs in the same way that the great composers wrote their songs. For example, Schubert is famous for his piano parts that were an integral part of the song, and Paul Simon does the same thing. His guitar parts are an integral part of the song itself. It's not just an accompaniment. So let's see if I could give you an example. So in an era when a lot of people were writing songs and playing chords and doing the song, Paul Simon was creating guitar parts that had the same kind of artistic merit as great composers' piano parts. So here's an example. One of his early songs is The Dangling Conversation. It has this wonderful guitar part.
Through the curtain lace, shadows wash the room.
So that's a really nice example. That guitar part really creates a mood for the lyrics, and it becomes more of a duet partner with his voice rather than an accompaniment.
Do you feel like his guitar playing and the guitar parts that he composed are not talked about quite enough when people, you know, reflect on his impact on music at the time?
I think that's true. I think everybody talks about his lyrics more than anything else, and his lyrics are, of course, extraordinary. But I think his guitar parts and his composing, I think he's a great musician. And I think he really deserves more credit as a composer as well as a songwriter who wrote tremendously interesting and, in many cases, off-the-wall lyrics.
Do you remember, when were you born?
1946.
Okay. So can you, you know, remember you would have been like a late teenager or something, you know, when they were Simon and Garfunkel were big. Can you remember where you were, kind of where you crossed paths with his music for the first time?
Absolutely. The first song that I ever heard of Paul Simon's was the one many people heard for the first time. And that's a good example. Nobody can hear that and not immediately know that that's Simon and Garfunkel's Sounds of Silence. That guitar part is just so simple. Hello, darkness, my old friend. And you're off and running, but the guitar part sets the stage for that song so beautifully. And in another example in that same era is I Am a Rock, which has this wonderful introductory guitar part. The winter's day. And you can't mistake it for any other song.
Can you describe what it is, you know, not over technically, but just what is Paul Simon doing at the beginning of that song that's simple but distinctive and you know, starting to answer something like Paul Simon and I in Morocco is something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, he's going way beyond just playing the chords to a song. He's creating a guitar part which establishes the mood for the song, and technically, it's a very advanced guitar part. He's hammering on. Then he's pulling off. So he's technically, that's fairly challenging thing to do. And that's in an era when few guitar players were playing guitar parts that were that complex.
So are you making a case for, you know, one of the things that made his music stand out on the radio even were these thoughtful musical additions to the songs?
Absolutely. I mean, to me, that was the first thing that totally grabbed my attention, were his guitar parts. Of course, I was a little kid learning how to play guitar, and I was so fascinated by everybody who was a really creative guitar player. But when I listened to his guitar parts, I was just enthralled. So I had to go out and buy the albums and sit down for hours and figure out, how does he do that? You know, I'll give you an example of that. He wrote this wonderful, wonderful love song that was called For Emily, whenever I may find her. And he uses the 12 string for that song. And unlike most people who utilize the 12 string as a banging guitar, he actually utilized the octave strings to create the mood of the song. So the first time I ever heard his introduction, it sounded like this. And I went, God, how is he playing that so smoothly? And then I figured out one day he was doing it on the 12 string and using the octave note on his G string, and his guitar part was simply. What a dream I had, dressed in organdy, clothed in crimson. That beautiful? And it's so simple, you know, but it just establishes the mood beautifully. And it's a very creative use of the octave strings on the 12-string guitar that very few people, even to this day, ever really do.
One part of Paul Simon's story is that they produced this largely folk album, and then he went to England and actually produced an album called this Paul Simon Songbook, which I just heard for the first time, which is just all him on guitar playing acoustic, many of the songs that were on the first several Simon and Garfunkel albums. And then they had overdubbed electric electric instruments onto Sound of Silence, mm-hmm. to make it a folk rock hit. And from that point on, then that seemed to be a bit of the formula, is that they added sort of folk rock instrumentation. Did that add to or take away from what you liked about Paul Simon's music?
That's a great question. If you want to decide that for yourself, actually, if you listen to Wednesday Morning 3 a.m., Sounds of Silence is on that album without the added studio instrumentation. You can hear the original version with his acoustic guitar. And then if you listen to the Sounds of Silence album, then you hear everything that the studio added. And my personal opinion is a lot of those studio things really got in the way of his guitar playing. But fortunately, many of these songs, he recorded them with just his guitar. You know, like the ones we were just talking about, Dangling Conversation and For Emily, Whenever I Might Find Her, and I Am a Rock. Another one where his guitar part was so distinctive and really created the mood to the song was this. Again, this is a guitar part. As soon as you hear it, you know immediately what song it is.
Are you going Scarborough Fair?
And as soon as you hear that, you know immediately what song it is. It's actually a very ancient song. It's a medieval song. But his arrangement really created a whole new way to listen to the song. And his guitar part creates a mood that so enhances the words.
What else is interesting about what he did with that song, either technically or...
Well, technically, if you were to listen to an early folk singer do that song, the guitar part would be...
Are you going Scarborough Fair?
It would be something like that, where it would be pretty straightforward chords. But he creates this minor nine and suspended four. That's really creative. And this is a guy who totally taught himself all these things. It's really, really wonderful. As you can tell, I'm a fan. I'm a tremendous admirer of his guitar parts.
Yeah, I picked up on that. Well, and I picked up on it because you teach a guitar class, and I'm curious if interest in his music is perennial. I mean, every time you teach that class, do you hear students interested in the same group of musicians?
Every single time. That's a very, very interesting question. Having been performing in clubs and concerts for many, many years, even to this day, most of the requests that I get are the songs from the 60s and the 70s. Those are the songs that seem to have an enduring quality about them and an enduring message which people still identify with to this day.
And who is in that group?
Paul Simon, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, Jim Croce, James Taylor, and all of those people wrote guitar parts which are just unmistakable. And I think what I said earlier was also a really nice thing to think about with these songs is that the guitar was their duet partner, not their accompanist.
And when Paul Simon's interviewed, I guess this is true about some of the stars of the 60s, is that it's hard for them to even appreciate what's lasting about that music. You know, they either think that the lyrics are sophomoric or, you know, too precious or whatever. But it feels like that your experience, this is the timelessness about it more tied to the way the musicianship comes out and the way the instrument is played as much as the lyrics? Or do you feel like they're giving themselves too hard a time?
I think it would be hard to say which of those things is really more important. I think the sound of those guitars is so beautiful. And the way those guitars were recorded with really good microphones and recorded live. Nowadays, a lot of the things you hear on the radio, they're not even recorded guitars. They're piezoelectric pickups plugged into a sound system. So there's a whole generation today that thinks that's what an acoustic guitar sounds like until they listen to these early recordings. And then they go, wow, that's a beautiful sound. So, you know, one of the things that I like to say about that is the acoustic guitar has a sound that goes straight to your heartstring. That'll grab you every time.
Yeah, it's nice. Do you have other favorites from those four albums that, jump to mind that you either like to play or listen to that, you'd like to talk about?
Oh, sure. The list goes on and on and on. So if we go to... Yeah, I've got a little congestion going on there. If we go to the Bookends album... He has this wonderfully beautiful, simple guitar part. And he's playing major 7 chords. Now he's playing jazz chords. So he's taking another leap forward. And that sets the stage for Old Friends, which is also the Bookends theme, which is the theme for that album. So he's very advanced. Another thing about Paul Simon was he continued to improve his musicianship. He was always going for new sounds and new directions. And then if you listen to these jazz sounds that he did here, if you listen to his later solo albums, he went very far in that direction. Really did a lot of wonderful, wonderful jazz-sounding guitar parts.
Yeah. But you can hear it, the beginnings of that creeping in those early records.
Yes,
yeah.
Very much so. Uh-huh.
Let's see. As a recording artist, musician, singer yourself, could you talk a little bit about you've talked really well about how important the guitar part is, but to talk a little bit about how the guitar, Garfunkel's voice, Simon's voice, creates something that is, you know, a power to its own?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I remember to this day how I heard them in concert for the first time. And it was right here in Albuquerque in the Pit, the basketball arena here in town, where the New Mexico Lobos play basketball. Huge, gigantic space, a barn, pretty mediocre acoustics. But they walked out on stage. Paul Simon walked out on stage with three guitars. They were all Guilds in those days. He had two Guild 6 strings and the Guild 12 string, and Garfunkel. And I say the three of them, in a sense, mm-hmm. Paul Simon, Art Garfunkel, and the guitar, created the biggest, fullest, most extraordinary sound. But the sound of their two voices, their blend, and the way they phrased everything so identically is also truly an amazing thing. Sometimes you can't even tell which of them is singing which part. But when you hear their voices separately, they're very distinct voices. But their blend was so extraordinary. So it's a trio. It's two voices and the guitar singing the third harmony part.
Yeah, and they often didn't play without a band. I mean, only occasionally when they were together, I think later in their career, they backed themselves with a band. What year was that show? Was that on one of the reunion tours, or was it early?
No, that was very early. That was in the late 60s. That was when I was very young, had hardly any idea what they were really doing on the guitar, but just watching him play, I learned a tremendous amount and was also thoroughly inspired. You know, I think I probably went home and learned three new Simon and Garfunkel songs after hearing that concert.
And then when I think of bookends, you know, you mentioned these beautiful guitar parts, but I also think of that album as being one where Simon and Roy Halley, the engineer, and Art Garfunkel really started to do what the Beatles did with Sgt. Pepper, which is to really try to create sounds in the studio that even went beyond some of the guitar parts. Did any of that stuff stand out as inventive to you?
Mm-hmm. It did. And an example on that album is, let's see if I can think how that went. He starts with that guitar part, then the band comes in. When she goes, she's gone. And then that builds, and then that arrangement really built, and it really worked. It really worked beautifully. He still used the guitar as the instrument to establish a certain mood and a certain space for the song, but then the accompaniment would take off and really, really elaborate, very much like Sgt. Pepper. You're right. That's a very good comparison.
Well, what's fun or interesting about that lick as a player?
Well, again, he's doing these pull-offs. He's also, instead of playing the song as a straight major chord, he's putting a seventh into the chord, which gives the song, you're immediately taken a little bit aback. You go, whoa, this is not going to be an immediate, beautiful, listen to these lovely words type of song. You know, this one, he's really trying to get your attention. You know, it's just such a good example of how he creates moods with his guitar parts.
Yeah, and those who do focus in on his lyrics talk about how he seemed to be very thoughtful about trying to start his lyrics with something that would be engaging. A man walks down the street, says, why am I soft in the middle? You know,
right.
Just like a phrase like that, or some of the ones you've already mentioned, a winter's day, you know, deep and dark December, you know, paints a picture. And so, hearing your perspective now, it sounds to me like he's doing that with his lyrics, and he's also being very careful about trying to present something on the guitar that's not just flat, you know, that it's got some color to it.
Oh, absolutely. And let's see, another really good example, we can go way back to one of his really, really early songs. It's called Kathy's Song. Wonderful love song, and it has this wonderful guitar part that starts like this. So here again, he's got these wonderful dissonances and jazz kind of suspensions. And then he's doing these great chords where he's playing a G chord, and he hammers it into a C chord and keeps the G bass note. I mean, this is musical technique that goes back to Bach. It's really beautiful stuff.
Well, gosh, this is rich material. I wouldn't want to cut you off if there was, you know, anything else that you were kind of ruminating on as you knew I was going to come over, like either other favorites or observations about his place in the music pantheon or his playing. Anything else rumbling around up there?
Good question. I think that as time goes by, we will recognize more and more his genuine genius as a lyricist, as a composer, as a guitarist. I think that he will be recognized in future years in the same way that we now talk about composers like Schubert, who wrote great songs.